the Suns. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Coming off the court, you hear it straight from a Suns player with Burns and Gambo. Presented by First Bank. First Bank is proud to be the official bank of the Phoenix Suns. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC.
Every Tuesday at 3 o'clock, we talk with one of the members of the Phoenix Suns, and this one we're really excited about because we've had him on the show before. It's always a lot of fun to talk with him, especially coming off of a night like he had last night, no doubt about it. Cameron Payne, who had himself 20 points, 3 assists, 3 rebounds, and was huge off that bench. He joins us right now on the 72 Sold Sports Line, coming off the Suns' win over San Antonio. Cam, welcome back to the show. I'm Dave. You got Gambo here with you. Congratulations on the win and the win streak, man.
Thank you, man. What's going on? Appreciate y'all having me, man.
We missed you when you were with that hamstring injury. What'd you miss, 5 games with that injury, I think?
Yeah, around there, yep.
Yeah, and you were missed. There was no doubt about it. Tell me about that type of injury for a basketball player. You know, DeAndre Hopkins has a hamstring injury right now for the Cardinals, and It's a tough injury, man. It is a difficult injury. How does it affect you as a player?
I mean, honestly, I feel it's just like that injury is like a not a one day you wake up and everything's cool. It's kind of something where you kind of got to wait until it's fully healed before getting back out there on the court. Because if you try to come back early, man, you could have been out a week and now you out a month or 2 months. So it's always good to be extra cautious about it. I mean, we run up and down the court all game. So you just kind of got to make sure you stay on top of it and make sure it's healthy so you won't re-aggravate it.
Yeah, some guys are running up and down the floor. You're flying up and down the floor. I got to imagine for you, not that a hamstring injury, I don't want to demean it for anybody else on the roster, but for you especially, with just how fast you get up and down that floor, I have to imagine that was a real debilitating thing that you had to deal with, and probably something, like you said, you just had to make absolute sure you were good before you're back on the floor.
Yeah, for sure. I ain't want to rush it. Like you said, I fly down the court, so I really need everything to be clicking on all cylinders for me. I had to take my time and just wait until it was the right time for my hamstring to be right to get back out there and help my team get some wins.
Seemed like that game against Sacramento was, you know, kind of fueled you a little bit. That was a great game. 24 points. That matched the career high. You shot the ball well, 9 of 14. You knocked down a bunch of threes. You had a bunch of rebounds, assists, the steal. Was that the game where you kind of felt like, okay, I'm back?
It's crazy. No, not really. I still wasn't really moving at the pace I wanted to. But I mean, I'm never gonna knock a game. I had a great game, and I'm cool with that.
Cameron Payne, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo.
So I had 24 points, had a great game, but I didn't feel that good in that game. So,
have you had that game where you do feel like you felt good? I mean, what's that game for you then? If it's not that one,
I'll probably say after the second, or probably the second Mavs game. I really felt my feet up under me, started to get back in, like, my game form, picking up full court, just starting to get my identity back. And then, I mean, obviously the last couple of games I've been getting to the rack. I think that's showing that I'm pretty much getting back to full health when I can go to the rack constantly over and over again and just keep getting back up without nothing.
Yeah.
That's the blessing right there.
20 points last night in the win over the San Antonio Spurs. What from you? Okay, from your standpoint now, what you guys accomplished last year, putting last year in the rearview mirror, and yet at the same time, kind of tapping into that magic that you guys had last year. Has there been any kind of a difference at all from how you guys are on the floor, off the floor last year compared to how it's been so far to start this year?
Nah, I feel like everything's been the same. I mean, we still got the same mindset at hand. We kind of feel like it'll be tougher since we got a couple new guys, but we just know what's at stake, man. We really got there close last year, and we kind of really just want to get back there, and it really helps that we have a lot of the same players. So it's really not too much to be taught. It's just more so us finding a rhythm with each other, with some of the new guys.
Yeah.
Really just kind of picking back up from where we left off last year. I think that's the biggest thing that we have been prone on and locked on to since the beginning of the season.
Cameron Payne, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's funny that you mentioned that because I was thinking about this when I knew you were coming on the show today. I was thinking about how, yeah, it is a lot of the same guys from a year ago, except when you're on the floor with the second unit, and then it isn't a lot of the same guys from a year ago, right? It's Landry, and now it's JaVale. So from your perspective, how challenging has it been to kind of, in as the point guard, the guy who's in charge of weaving that all together, how much of a challenge has that been when it comes to the few new guys that are on this roster on kind of integrating them in so you guys are as cohesive as you can be?
It was kind of tough at first just because we had a couple of injuries, so we really never got to get that fluent stuff going. JaVale was in starting, so we had Tank as the backup, and DA went out, and it's just back and forth. I was out, then Elfer was playing, so we really never had a good just fluent couple games, and we're finally getting to that now. It's been a little tough, but we're starting to learn each other. We know how to put pressure on teams, and we're just starting to find our niche as a second unit, what we bring to the table every night. And once we keep just figuring each other out, honestly, I think we can be even better.
All right, be honest with me, because, you know, not getting a chance to see JaVale McGee play, you know, every day, you know, I knew he was a good player. I didn't know he was this good, because now that I get to watch him night in and night out, I'm, like, blown away by him. I mean, he goes after every single block shot. He's just – did you realize that he was this good of a player?
I mean, I always knew JaVale was good. He was on a playoff team. He won – he's a three-time NBA champion. Obviously, he's doing something right. And, I mean, I feel like with the Suns, you know, any given night on our team, anybody can be that guy. And I just feel like the type of team we have, we keep that same identity. So, I mean, with what JaVale does, yeah, he's gonna get that night, and that's the night that's probably no one else is clicking. It just shows how much of a team we are. We really don't care who gets the credit as long as we get the win. And you know, a lot of teams don't have that same mindset and culture, but we do, and that, you know, gives confidence to every single player. So some things you think they didn't have. Well, shoot, man, everyone has so much confidence in each other that, man, they might give you something crazy. So, I mean, it's just, you know, the continuous work, and also, man, just having confidence in your teammates, man, that it brings the most out of you.
You know, the starting unit's the same, right? Those guys, Chris and Book and DA and, mm-hmm. and McHale and Jay, that's it. But for you guys, you had to incorporate Landry. You had to incorporate JaVale. So how long did it take to get into the rhythm, considering two of the five guys are new?
Honestly, we still finding a rhythm. I'm gonna keep it real with you. We still trying to find the rhythm. We really knocking down shots right now, but I mean, defensively, that's where we've been handling our business, and I feel like that's what we need to keep hanging our hats on. That's the second unit, is locking down people and let the offense take care of itself. So I don't really feel like it's been too hard, because I mean, Sham is one of the most unselfish players we know. Cam Johnson, same way. And we just feed off each other. And then JaVale, he just, like you said, come clean everything up. We just got a real identity for ourselves. And, I mean, we just go out there and try to attack it and play at the highest level every night.
All right, so last one for Cameron Payne, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, is the Suns have won 13 straight games. How much do you guys talk about that? How much conversation on the bus, on the plane, at the gym, wherever it is that you're at, during shoot around, do you guys talk about it at all, or is it like off limits, not allowed to discuss it?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's off limits, but honestly, man, we just look at it game by game. We just worry about the next day. Never can't look too far ahead. We just take it one game at a time. Just like tomorrow, we got Cleveland, and we're just going to figure that game out and move on to the next one. It's all about just win one game at a time. And then whatever happens, what comes with it, comes with it. Just like the playoffs.
Yeah.
You got to win one game at a time in order to win the whole thing. So we just want to get back there. And I mean, and it's showing right now with just our heart and just how we plan, our effort, energy every night. We just came close to something, and we want to get back there. I think that's what it is. I don't really think it has too much to do about the streak. It's just more so about us and just being a good team and just trying to be better and get back to the playoffs, get back to the championship.
Cam, we always appreciate the conversation we do. You're always fun to have on the air for a few minutes. Thanks for the time. Best of luck, man. I know we'll catch up with you at some point later down the road this season, man. Good luck, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
No problem. Thank you, guys.
So thanks, Cam.
You got it. Cameron Payne joining us here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Get your price at 72sold.com. The Suns will look to make it 14 straight games tomorrow against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone and your Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. When we come back, we are no longer too early in the season to start thinking about the Super Bowl, setting our eyes on the Super Bowl, getting the number one seed. Can the Cardinals get a hold of that? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
Coming off the court, presented by First Bank. First Bank is proud to be the official bank of the Phoenix Suns. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
It's possible something like this has been out there before. It's possible this has been written before. I'm going to tell you right now, it was the first time I saw it, and it's therefore the first time that we are going to talk about it. Jeffrey Chihata is a columnist, writer at NFL.com, and every single week he does this column in which he says, you know, here's the three teams whose stock are rising, three teams whose stock are falling, this is what I saw, this is what I noticed. And he ends, Gambo, every single column with the extra point. He calls it my slowly evolving Super Bowl pick. It will be updated each week depending on performances. Right now, today, he's got the Cardinals beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's have some fun with it. I mean, there it is.
Wow.
You know, November 23rd? The first Arizona Cardinals in the Super Bowl prediction.
My slowly
and the Patriots
over the Patriots over the new over the New England Patriots. Not that I mean, look, this Patriots team has been impressive. All right, I don't want to diminish what they've done for a second. They've got the best point differential in the NFL. Bill Belichick is that defense right now is playing at a very, very, very high level. But I don't know if this is quite the same Patriots team that we've seen in the Super Bowl with Tom Brady all those years. They still do have a rookie quarterback. That still would be a very, very, very big moment for him to be in there. But, yeah, let's have some fun with this. I mean, Cards Patriots, sign me up right now, right?
So I heard Bickley and Murata talking about this. Just looking at the AFC, Buffalo's the 7th seed right now. Kansas City's a 4 seed.
Yeah.
Like, and then, you know, what Charger team are you getting? What Bengal team are you getting? Tennessee's the 1 seed. Baltimore's the 2. New England's the 3. Kansas City's the 4. The Bills right now are the 7 seed. So, you know, somebody may get a really dangerous Bills team super early. So that AFC's a little crazy. You know, the NFC, not so much. You know, we talked about it yesterday. New Orleans is the 7. Arizona's the 1. Everybody in between. But listen, it's not like the Cardinals are not. They should not be a surprise that people are picking them to win the Super Bowl. They're great on the road, so if they have to go on the road, they've proven to be great on the road. Their defense is shutting everybody down. 16 games the last 2 years, 20 points or less. Their offense is dynamic. They won 2 games without Kyler Murray, you know, DeAndre Hopkins. They won 2 out of 3 games. Like, you know, they're a dangerous team. Yeah. Now, others may still want to go with the Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady based on the pedigree of the quarterbacks. I get it. I mean, I get that. But Green Bay's got some injuries right now that they've got to deal with, right? Their left guard's out for the entire season, and so they got some issues. But it's the AFC that's pretty interesting because, I don't know, who would you take right now in the AFC?
You know, I'm so glad that you mentioned that because as part of the same column, I'll tell you right now, he wrote that. That's kind of what the lead part of his column was how the three hottest teams in the AFC right now are the Kansas City Chiefs, the New England Patriots, and the Indianapolis Colts. All three of those teams a month ago were under 500. The Chiefs were in last place in the AFC West a month ago, and yet these are the three hottest teams. Who would I take in the AFC right now? Let me give me just a second here on this one.
I'll go Kansas City.
Okay.
If Henry's back, I would take Tennessee. But it's something about like the way that defense is playing much better now in Kansas City, and I still, you know, I put a lot of stock in Mahomes and Kelce. So I would still go Kansas City. But with the thought that, man, I could see Tennessee winning it. I could see Baltimore winning it. I could see Kansas City winning it. I could still see Buffalo winning.
I could too.
I don't know if I could see the Patriots winning it yet.
The rookie quarterback thing, just as much of a mastermind as Bill Belichick is and as good as he's got that defense playing, I can't see the Patriots either. Their schedule gets pretty tough the last six or seven games of the season. I'll pull it up here in a second and tell you what it is. Gambo, I would take the Baltimore Ravens. I think this might be the year for Baltimore to come out of the AFC just because I'm not totally sure I trust Kansas City's defense. I know they've played better the last four games, but somewhat suspect competition outside of Dallas, and they were missing CeeDee Lamb and they were missing Amari Cooper. The Titans, I do think you're starting to see Derrick Henry not being available. I think that's starting to catch up with them. Buffalo, man, that what a disappointment that has been so far this year. I mean, especially if you go by point differential as a guide, they've got the second best point differential in the NFL, which means they should be a whole lot better than 6-4, but they're not. They've got one of the top scoring offenses and one of the top scoring defenses in the NFL. They're both, I think, top three in both, and they're still the seventh seed right now in the AFC. I think through all of that muck and all of those questions, I think this might be the year Baltimore breaks through with Lamar Jackson. I think
see it. Like I said, you could see it. And I think in the NFC, so I think I could see four teams in the AFC. In the NFC, I could see Green Bay. I could see Arizona. I could see Tampa. That's it. I do not see the Rams as a Super Bowl contender. I don't.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because they put up this graphic last night after the Monday night game was over. The race for the number one seed in the NFC, and this was right after the Bucs beat the Giants last night. And oh, by the way, the Giants fired their offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett, today. The Cardinals not only have the easiest schedule the rest of the way between themselves, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Dallas. They've got the easiest schedule in terms of the remaining competition, which means that their chances of clinching the number one seed, according to their metrics and their simulations, 49%. Basically a coin flip, a 50-50 coin flip for the Arizona Cardinals to be the number one seed in the NFC. And they do not, by the way, have the LA Rams listed at all. Doesn't mean that they couldn't go to the Super Bowl, but right now it's the Cardinals, Packers, Bucks, and Cowboys. Those are the only teams listed as any kind of a real chance of getting the number one seed in the NFC.
Yeah, because when you look at the Cardinals' schedule, they're not going to play. They don't have a game against the Bucks. They don't have a game against the Packers. They do have the Rams, and they do have Dallas. So those are the games that...
And the Colts, too. Don't forget the Colts.
I like the Colts.
I know you do.
I mean, you know I like the Colts. Their running back is as good as there is in the NFL right now. So I do like the Colts. And, you know, when we did a couple of weeks ago, when we started to go through wins and losses, what's left of the games, I did pick a loss against the Colts. So that team scares me. They're good. They run. And what's the Cardinals' weakness? Stopping the run. Indianapolis do well? Run the football
really well.
That's not a game that, you know, that's a game that scares me a little bit.
I promise the Patriots schedule, here it is. The rest of the way, they are home against the Titans, they're at the Bills, they're at the Colts, they're home against the Bills, they're home against the Jags, they're at the Dolphins. Their next four games are tough. I know the Titans are taking on some water right now, but home against the Titans, at the Bills, at the Colts, home against the Bills. Those are the Patriots' next four. They get through those four games, and we're still talking about New England as a potential Super Bowl team. Bill Belichick might be the coach of the year in the NFL, given that he's got a rookie quarterback. He might well be.
Yeah. No, I mean, it, right now the two favorites are Cliff Kingsbury and Bill Belichick, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, those are your two favorites. Yeah, there's still time to determine it. Right now I'd give it to Cliff. But, you know, if the Cardinals lose to Dallas, they lose to the Rams, and Belichick ends up winning that division over Buffalo, maybe he gets it.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, earlier we had Cameron Payne on the show. He has been a huge part of the Suns' success this season. It hasn't just been him producing off the bench. It's been a whole bunch of guys. We'll talk about it next. Burns and Gambo. Did you notice that, Gambo?
The music?
Eric's first Sports Center update.
Wow. Yes. And it was good. It was good.
Bravo.
It was good.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Well done.
How'd you feel?
Do you feel good? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel great. I love talking and I love being on the show. So it seems like a good fit, right?
Look at that.
I love to
talk. Your first update.
Yeah, he's sitting right next to Erin Maloney, and she and I were laughing about how, and it's probably been like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, that she did her first update on the Burns and Gambo show.
It didn't go like Eric's.
It didn't go that well.
Yeah.
It did not go that well, guys.
I remember it well.
Do you remember? Yeah, I was like standing over her shoulder listening to it. Kind of yes, no, yes, no. That was good, Eric. That was really good. Yeah, I think.
Are you going to do the rest of them today?
Yeah, I'll be back in 30 minutes.
All right, that shall be the poll question. Let's rate his next update.
I'm only going to put one option. It's going to be 10 out of 10. That's
on
it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, let's rate the next update by Eric.
He did great. Congratulations. That's awesome.
The kids, they're growing up right before our eyes.
Man, it was just
my birthday, and they're growing up.
Seriously, it was just they were in diapers just a couple of days ago, and what happened?
Look, I mean,
who says I'm still not in diapers now?
That's personal. You need to keep that to yourself. I mean, I know you
I'll save it for the next update.
I know you don't have a lot of bathroom breaks in there, but make it work. Congratulations, Eric, our his first Sports Center update here on the Burns and Gambo show. Very happy about that. That's really, really cool. We just had Cameron Payne on the show earlier today, just about a half hour ago, and he said, yeah, it was hard integrating the new guys.
It was kind of tough at first just because we had a couple of injuries, so we really never got to get that fluent stuff going. JaVale was in starting, so we had Tank as the backup, and DA went out, and it's just back and forth. I was out, then Elfer was playing, so we really never had a good just fluent couple games, and we're finally getting to that now. It's been a little tough, but we're starting to learn each other. We know how to put pressure on teams, and we're just starting to find our niche as a second unit. What we bring to the table every night. And once we keep just figuring each other out, honestly, I think we can be even better.
Second straight game, Gambo, including last night when they beat the Spurs, where the bench produced 48 points. It seems like with all those new faces in the second unit, the Suns are starting to figure it out a little bit coming off the bench.
Yeah, there's no question that they have one of the best benches in the NBA. I mean, there's no question about it. The Bucks have a good bench. The Warriors, obviously, you know, have a good bench. But the Phoenix Suns are, to me, right up there. And I might even take them, you know, as when you see. Because they've got everything you could want. There's three-point shooting. There's got different guys that can handle the ball. There's defense. There's rim protection. There's shot blocking. I mean, what does that unit not have? Now, and even with, and I was even, when we had campaign on, like, hey, you know, are you guys there right now? And he said, you know, no, like, we're still not at that point where, you know, we've clicked yet. Because there's, you know, everybody's back from the starting unit. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Jay Crowder, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges. The bench has two new guys coming in Landry and JaVale. So they haven't developed the chemistry. The starters are all the same. It's all the same. The bench guys, it's a little bit different because they're incorporating some new guys.
Yeah, Monty Williams, after the win last night against the Spurs, their 13th in a row.
I mean, more than that, I saw the defense. You know, that's what has picked up for Cam. If you watch last night's game against Denver, we are up 20-22. Cam's still guarding 94 feet with 2 minutes to go on the clock. And then I think from an offensive perspective, he's finding the balance of attacking and finding, you know, he's got wiggle in his game. I think he's in much better condition to play the way that he played last year in the playoffs. And we just hope it continues.
Yeah, and that whole bench. I mean, if you think about all the different little things that have gone into the season so far for the Suns and the 13-game win streak, the second-best record in the West, et cetera, et cetera. You think about that bench, though. JaVale McGee, he spent some time as a starter because DeAndre Ayton was hurt. Cameron Payne was out for a while with that hamstring injury. That kind of messed with the mojo and the flow of the bench unit. You had Landry Shamet, who, you know, early on in the season, I think, had to kind of get used to the idea, hey, if you're open, shoot it. There's no hesitation. There's no restrictions. And then there was Cameron Johnson, who, you know, one of my favorite players, especially with how he played in the postseason last year. For whatever reason, it just kind of got off to a slow start for him this year. Maybe it was the same issue with him kind of dealing with all these different players around him. But you look at those guys and you look at the Nuggets game, there's McGee with 10. There's Cameron Payne with 10. There's Cameron Johnson with 22 coming off the bench. It does seem like now that McGee has settled in as a certified bench guy and not as a part-time starter, and that Cameron Payne is back and seemingly healthy from that hamstring, that second unit can really, really take off, and that could be a huge development for the Suns this year.
Yeah, there's different ways to look at it, right? If you go look at last year and you say, okay, who off the bench had the most points? Well, that was Jordan Clarkson, and then Tim Hardaway Jr., and then Tyler Hero, and then Chris Boucher. You know, the Suns didn't have anybody in the top 10 scoring off the bench because the average was like 18 points down to Tyrese Halliburton, who had 13. Who had the best rebounds? Well, Enes Kanter of Portland off the bench had 11 rebounds, and it was Dwight Howard, and then, you know, Zubac, and, you know, go down the list. The Suns didn't have anybody in that category. Then you go assist. T.J. McConnell was the best guy in the NBA with assists. Then it was Tyrese Halliburton, Joe Ingles, and, campaign was like 8th at 3.62. But that's not, you know, just this. It's the way the unit plays. It's not who has the most points or rebounds or assists. Is how do you play as a unit? And the Suns' second unit is really, really good. And it gets a lot of trust from Monty that I think a lot of other second units just don't get. And that second unit has an opportunity, you know, to play with Chris Paul sometimes. And sometimes they play with Devin Booker a little bit. And they get to play with McHale, right? You saw last night's game, right? When at that second unit, McHale started in that fourth quarter. You saw McHale on the, you know, out there with the second unit, and then McHale comes off, and then, you know, Chris Paul comes in. But that second unit last night, fourth quarter, was Payne, McHale, Landry, JaVale, and then Cam Johnson. Now, eventually, like I said, they brought Paul back for McHale at the 9-minute mark. But those guys do get the opportunity to get some run with either McHale or with Paul or with Book sometimes.
Yep, here's one more from Cameron Payne on how they're still trying to find that rhythm as a team.
Honestly, we still finding a rhythm. I'm gonna keep it real with you. We still trying to find the rhythm. We really knocking down shots right now, but I mean defensively, that's where we've been handling our business, and I feel like that's what we need to keep hanging our hats on. That's the second unit, is locking down people and let the offense take care of itself. So I don't really feel like it's been too hard, because I mean Sham is one of the most unselfish players we know. Cam Johnson, same way, and we just feed off each other. And then JaVale, he just, like you said, come clean everything up. We just got a real identity for ourselves, and I mean, we just go out there and try to attack it and play at the highest level every night.
Next up for the Suns, they try to make it 14 straight. They're taking on the Cavaliers on the road tomorrow. When we come back on this Tuesday edition of Burns and Gambo, if you're an ASU football fan, you probably feel like you're on an island right now, trying to figure out who your next coach is going to be next season. The reality is you aren't alone. There are a lot of people trying to figure out what's going to be happening with ASU and their coach. We'll talk about that coming up here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
We'll mention this in the reset, Gambo, but I just got to bring it up now since we're going to be talking about college coaches and Herm Edwards and openings and things like that. James Franklin's new deal with Penn State.
10-year deal.
Oh, my God.
10-year deal.
Gets paid $8.5 million per year. He gets a $7 million salary. He gets a $500,000 retention bonus. He gets a $1 million life insurance loan. And his buyout, if
that
he...
That one's weird, isn't it?
It is a little... I don't even know what... He gets a loan for life insurance?
A $1 million... Like, what does that mean?
I don't know.
I'm not smart enough to know that. I saw that, too, and I was like, I don't understand that.
$1 million, so like He gets a life insurance, like he has a life insurance policy for $1 million. And what, did they loan him the money to be able to pay for that life insurance policy? I don't know.
He just got a 10-year contract that guarantees him how much money?
$8.5 million per year.
Okay, what does he need a $1 million loan for? What does he need a life insurance policy for $1 million?
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know. Hold on.
It's like overkill?
Okay, here it is. Okay, Maloney just, I'm cheating because I'm looking at the 4 o'clock reset right now. Franklin will also receive an annual loan of $1 million for a life insurance policy throughout the entirety of the contract. So every single year, he'll get loaned $1 million to pay for a life insurance policy that covers him in case he should pass away during the contract.
Okay.
All right? Am I explaining that right?
So the policy covers his contract.
Yeah. The policy covers while he's under contract, while he's the coach there. We're going to loan you $1 million to pay for this policy.
You think about where this program was. 2011 was Paterno's last year. That was the last year for Joe Paterno. And everybody thought at that time with the scandal was it Sandusky? Was that his name?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Just at Penn State, like it was death for Penn State. Bill O'Brien came in and didn't do a very good job. And then in 2014, they hired James Franklin. He was the coach of the year in 2016. He won a Big Ten championship. He's done a good job. He's not winning the championships the way Joe Paterno did. I mean, Paterno was there for, a really – Joe Paterno took over Penn State in 1966, the year I was born. And he coached them until 2011. So it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago right now, Joe Paterno was still the coach of Penn State.
Yeah.
Right? He was just finishing his tenure. 10 years ago right now, Joe Paterno. And that program was a mess then. And for the right reasons. It was a mess. But look where they are now. They bounced back. It's not the dominant program it once was. But Franklin has done a really good job of stabilizing them and giving them a chance to win.
And I got to imagine, and really the reason why I brought it up, in addition to just gawking at how much money he's going to make and how much money is available for premier head coaches, clearly Penn State had to be afraid that somebody was going to make a run at James Franklin. Whether it was Florida, whether it was LSU, whether it was USC, right? This is very much a we're gonna put out this fire before it even starts. Here's a brand new contract extension that will make you rich beyond your wildest dreams so that you can't leave us for LSU, or you can't leave us for Florida, or you can't leave us for USC.
Can you imagine if ASU could ever pay salaries like that for head coaches?
They never would. They never would.
Can you imagine?
I know. It's not their philosophy. It literally flies in the face of what Michael Crow believes about how these things should work.
Academics, baby.
Yep,
it's all about the academics.
That is just not in their DNA to pay that much money for a head coach of a football team.
Herm makes about $3.5 million a year, but that's a far cry from $8.5 million or whatever it is, right?
It's not the elite level of elite salary. Speaking of which, our poll question today, if you haven't seen it yet on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, is asking whether Herm Edwards is still going to be the coach of ASU when they go to their bowl game, whatever bowl game that's going to be. John Wilner, our buddy who covers the Pac-12 for the San Jose Mercury News, Pac-12 coaching chaos, hot seat updates as more openings loom. That was the headline of the story. And he went through it program by program to look at the state of the organization, the chance that the coach is going to leave, kind of where things stand right now. And at ASU, he gives the Sun Devils a chance of having a coaching vacancy at 75%. State of play, he writes, sloppy. They have only one victory over a ranked opponent and so far haven't come close to making the competitive leap they sought when Edwards took over. We continue to believe a change is more likely than not, either because Edwards decides to retire or is forced out. Essentially, the program right now is frozen in place, waiting for Edwards to make up his mind or for the NCAA to come down with sanctions or both. What a mess, he writes.
Yeah,
of ASU.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, it's this was the year that it was set up with all the seniors and the Pac-12 not being that good. It was set up for a lot of success, and they flopped. I mean, they lost to Washington State at home. They lost in Corvallis to Oregon State. They lost to Utah in a game that they had that game, and they should have won it, and they lost. So, I think that the run is over. I think that I don't blame them for trying. Right? They thought outside the box. They let's go with this professional model. I don't blame them. You know why? Because all the other years of ASU football was mediocrity. Go hire an up-and-coming coach or go hire an up-and-coming coach like Dirk Cutter or go hire a proven coach like Dennis Erickson. The results were the same, weren't they? Mediocrity.
Yes.
Mediocrity. Hire a guy in Todd Graham. Now, Todd Graham had a couple of – I liked Todd Graham as a coach. I did. 2 10-win seasons, but then, you know, everything fell apart and they weren't winning many games. But the traditional way of hiring coaches was just leading them to the same exact thing, mediocrity every single season. So they thought outside the box, they hired Herm, but, you know, here it is. It didn't work. I mean, it didn't work. It just, I mean, we can come to that conclusion right now. It did not work. So now you got to go back to the drawing board and figure something else out. And if I'm Ray Anderson, look, I'm not nothing against friendships or anything like that. You got to do what's right for the program. And we always say this. We talk about this all the time. Cardinals did it. If you hire the wrong guy, the best thing to do is move on.
Yeah.
It was a mistake. It didn't work. Move on. Don't try to compound that mistake by, you know, keep trying to bring him back every year. You know, it just doesn't. You couldn't have brought Steve Wilkes back. You know, you've got to do what's right. And the right thing for ASU is to find the next coach to try to lead this program out of mediocrity.
Yeah, and right now it probably doesn't really matter whether he resigns or whether he's fired. It's just a kind of a question of, you know, if it's going to happen, when it's going to happen. I think most people seem to think at this point that it's going to happen. We just don't know how or when or what it's going to look like. The whole conference could be upside down with coaching vacancies. Wilner projects USC. Obviously, Dante Williams, we know he's not going to be the main guy there. Though according to Wilner, apparently Dante Williams is telling recruits that he's getting the job. Not exactly sure why he's doing that. I don't think he's getting the job. But
really?
According to Wilner, Williams has told recruits he's getting the permanent job, according to a source immersed in the recruiting world. How he came to that conclusion, we cannot say, but it's not happening, Wilner wrote. Yes, the Trojans would love to keep him, but not as head coach. So Wilner's like,
man.
Yeah, no, you're not staying.
You can have a job on the team, but you're not going to be the head coach.
Washington, that job obviously is open.
Yes.
With Jimmy Lake. He writes that multiple industry sources believe the Huskies are going to aim high on this one. Here's the interesting one. He suggests, Wilner does, that if Kyle Whittingham can get the Utah Utes to the Rose Bowl, which would be the first time they've ever been there, that he might retire. He says chance of vacancy, 65%. That Whittingham is one game from leading the university to its first ever Rose Bowl. He's endured the death of two players. He turned 62. He has loads of grandkids in Salt Lake City, and he just became the winningest coach in school history. Our opinion, if the Utes win the conference championship, the Rose Bowl will be his final game.
Wow,
right? That kind of woo. That popped off the page.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, I've seen Jonathan Smith has done a great job at Oregon State. Just a great job. So he should be fine.
Yeah.
Cristobal at Oregon? I mean,
they're good.
Could he get another job or does he stay? Carl Durrell with Colorado? Like, they're terrible this year. You know? I mean, Jed Fish is only in his first season. He's not going anywhere. But here's the thing. Where does ASU rank in these coaching vacancies that could come up?
In the conference?
Yeah, where do they rank?
In the conference.
Yes.
Definitely behind USC, definitely behind Washington.
Okay. Washington State?
They
should be ahead of
them.
They should be.
They're not ahead of Utah. I mean, Utah's been to the Pac-12 championship game, what, 3 of the last 4 years? I mean, it might not be a better place to live, although Salt Lake's very nice. I think Utah's a better program. I think the state of Utah.
Should be ahead of Colorado if they get rid of Durrell. You should be ahead of Colorado.
Here's the problem, though. Here's the problem with this theory that you're rolling out there. What the investigation, the state of the allegations, the state of the investigation, what punishment is coming? How difficult is it going to be to recruit kids to ASU in the midst of all of that?
Hard.
That makes the job, frankly, not that attractive in the conference, and certainly not as attractive as it should be in a normal year in the conference. And look, let's call it like it is. It is hard for people to come into ASU and win. It's really hard. Guys haven't done it consistently.
There's been 14 coaching changes so far at this level. 3 of them coming to Pac-12. Washington, Washington State, USC. All fired their coaches. All got rid of their coaches. That's three teams in the Pac-12 have already gotten rid of their coaches.
Yeah.
And then we'll see when the season ends. Here's the thing, right? You can't fall too far behind the eight ball. Like, you've got to know right now what you're doing with Herm. You have to know. And if if you're going to move on, let's get ahead of everybody else. I mean, let's not play. Let's try to get, you know, get in on some of these coaches before everybody else grabs them. You know what I'm saying? Like, Don't wait too long. There's no way that today, November 23rd, you don't know what you're doing with Herm Edwards. You have to know. So if you're going to keep him, then no, regardless of what happens, then you should say it right now because that would help recruiting, which is why I think he's gone. Because if Herm was, with recruiting, as struggling, and as they're struggling, right? I mean, are they last in a Pac-12?
In recruiting, yes, I believe they are.
Yeah, if you were gonna keep Herm, I think you would have came out and you would have said it to try to help the recruiting out.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it's their longest win streak in over a decade with number 13 last night. The ins and outs of a close one for the Suns against the Spurs last night is next on the Burns and Gambo show.